Hello everyone, welcome to the International Business Podcast. If you work across time zones, borders and cultures, this is the show for you. I'm Leonardo, founder and host of the show, but let's make it simple and just call me Leo. I'm based in Shanghai and I'm accompanied by two co-hosts, Stefano, based in Paris, and Audrey from San Francisco. Coming up on today's episode.
Interpersonal skills are the innate skills that we are born with to help us communicate and connect with other humans. And they have found that just 3% of the people in the organization can influence up to 90%.
Heather helps top global leaders show up, speak up, and inspire action in a changing world. She focuses on fostering a muted communication cultures where every voice is heard, resulting in greater inclusion, innovation, and efficiency across remote and global teams. In the show notes, you can find the links to her upcoming book, Unmuted, and her TEDx talk, 2 Billion Voices, How to Speak That English Perfectly, which has accumulated over 100,000 views to date. Now, let's get to it. I'm glad to have you on. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Leo. So good to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
My pleasure, Heather. I would like to start by asking you this. Why would you define yourself as an international professional?
Well, believe it or not, this year marks 20 years since I left America, my birth country. I left on the 4th of July, 2002. And I know what you're thinking, Leo. You're saying her parents must have taken her to Europe or somewhere when she was 5 years old. But no, I left about a month after my university graduation. And I moved to Denmark to be with my then boyfriend, now husband. So that was a very good decision. It could have ended very badly, but it all worked. And we spent 4 years there and then came to Singapore for 8, went back to Denmark another 4, and now we're back in Singapore again for 3 more. I have two kind of teenage daughters, 11 and 13, who were born in Singapore. So I'm, in addition to having an international career, raising 2 third culture kids, which comes with its own set of challenges as well. So just about everything in our lives is international. We speak Danish and English at home. Everything. I absolutely love it. It's the only way I'd want to live. And I actually decided when I was about 15 that I was going to live abroad. Don't ask me what spurred that. I just knew that I wanted to see the world. And that's what I did.
Today, I would like to talk about communication. What are the secrets to a successful global communication strategy?
I think the biggest thing is understanding how multifaceted it is. So one of the biggest mistakes we can make and that I see a lot of organizations making is thinking that this is just a language issue. They need better English, right, for the global communication, or it's just a cross-cultural issue, or let's just pour a bunch of training on them and they'll get better at presenting. But it is so much more than that. I mean, what we're talking about with global communication is right on these fault lines of language and identity and culture. It's about who we are and how we show up in the world. And that takes a much more integrated approach that starts in self-awareness, understanding of ourselves, understanding of others and different perspectives, knowing how to be open-minded and non-judgmental, then gaining our self-confidence and worth and knowing how to speak up in the world, having skills, confidence, and self-confidence. And then, of course, probably the most important piece, being able to operate in a safe environment where we're encouraged to speak up, where there aren't negative ramifications, where you aren't going to be embarrassed by your boss in front of the team. So all of these elements come together. And I see so many organizations trying to find a quick fix, trying to make global communication something simpler than it really is. But it is probably the most important part of leadership and the way we run our organizations.
In one sentence, and because of your great communication skills, I know you can do this.
Put me on the spot. What a challenge.
Absolutely. That's what I'm doing. How would you define interpersonal skills?
Interpersonal skills are the innate skills that we are born with to help us communicate and connect with other humans. That is the one sentence that would describe interpersonal skills. And the problem today is we've forgotten how to be human. We all have these skills. And especially in the last 2 years with the pandemic, we've just forgotten how to be human. Now we're going back into the workplace. Like, what do I do? How do I connect? What should I say? I'm so nervous. I don't know what to do. And these are skills we all have. We were born with them. And it's just so that we can connect with others, because that's what we are meant to do as human beings.
What do you mean when you said we forgot how to be human?
It's funny, you know, the minute that pandemic hit, and we all went online and we shifted everything into this virtual world and started communicating through computers, everything kind of shifted and changed. And I would get phone calls from my clients saying, Heather, what do I do? Like, and they didn't even know where to start. And they would actually ask me, like, what are all your other clients asking for right now? Like, what programs are you doing for them? I think we need to do the same ones. What should I do? What should I do? And we've been navigating this space of social distance, physical distance, which is what it really is. And we've become so isolated that now it's almost like a shock to our system trying to get back into this and reignite these human skills that we've had all along. And I think there's a lot of anxiety around it, a lot of nervousness about being around people physically. I mean, I don't know your situation right now in Shanghai, but I mean, for us here in Singapore, we are still dealing with this and waiting for events to happen, and things are slowly opening, and then they say one thing and then it's taken away the next day. And then, you know, it's like, when will it end? And so we're all really struggling now to figure out how to be vulnerable, how to talk about these things, how to show up and be our authentic selves. I think there's been a big reawakening for a lot of people saying, you know, I want more passion in my life at work. I want more authenticity in my life at work. And that means becoming human again. And it's something that we left out of business a long time ago. And I think it's about time to bring it back in.
Let's talk about leadership communication. How CEOs and C-suite leaders can encourage cultures of open listening?
Well, the first step is for them to start listening. That would be the first step, right? That might sound a bit simplistic, but if you want to encourage listening, then you have to start listening. And this is more than holding a town hall and doing a pulse survey. It's a lot more than that. It's about starting to measure our relationships, our communication in our teams, finding out where the silos are, finding out who works well together, who are the influencers in the organization. We have so much data that we can analyze at this time. And most companies are only looking at the demographics. They aren't actually analyzing the social network of our teams. And there's a lot that we can find out there. There's an organization in Denmark that I partner with to do this research in companies. And they have found that just 3% of the people in the organization can influence up to 90%. So one CEO they worked with, he said, it was so funny. He goes, yeah, so if we wanted to spread a meme around the office, those are the people that we say to send it to and have them send it out, because it hits everybody in the organization. We need to start focusing on this. We need to start focusing on the relationships and how communication is working.
Why people don't listen, Heather? What is their problem? What is our problem? You know,
there's a lot of problems when it comes to listening. We have a lot of bad listening habits, and I am not perfect, believe me. I mean, when I do my own unmuted assessment, I score quite high on the confidence, quite low on the self-awareness and the conscious communication, because sometimes it is hard for me to listen. And what are some of the things that we do? And we do a lot of these naturally. We jump to conclusions. We want to finish someone's sentence, and we often think that that's a good thing. Like, oh, we're so in love. We're so connected. I can finish his sentences. No, that's not a good thing. You know, we all have our own ideas. We need to let each other finish our thoughts. Sometimes we're trying to find a solution and give an answer without fully listening to the question. We see these things happen over and over and over again. And where it comes from, why we do it, I don't know if I have the perfect answer for you there. I think it comes down to our human nature. You know, we are most interested in ourselves and our problems and our concerns, and we like to talk about ourselves as well. And that's why we so often will hear someone tell a story. And then there's always that person in the group that has to one-up them with their story that's very similar. You know, have you ever had that happen? Like friends that just always have to one-up you, like, oh, that happened to me too. You're trying to build connection and show a similar experience, but at the same time, it can often play down the other person's experience. So learning how to listen actively, setting our judgments aside, understanding our own inherent biases, which play an enormous role in how we listen and see the world around us. These are all things that we need to learn and work through. And I think we're getting better. We're getting better at it. We're talking about it more. And I have a lot more organizations asking for these skills as well to learn more about them.
What is the meaning of linguistic diversity and inclusion?
I can tell you there's two different meanings. There's the general meaning that we're seeing being used in all the DEI conversations right now, which is basically making sure that our communication is not offensive in any way, removing gender biased language, removing sexually biased language, removing color biased language. So instead of you guys, we say everyone, you know, and we're trying to be inclusive in our language. Now that's one part of it. And it's a very important part of it. But I think we're missing the much, much bigger picture. And that is the bias that is inherent in our language. So what is the language of global business? For everyone listening right now, you're probably doing business in English. You're listening to English podcasts. You are operating in English every day. I mean, English isn't your first language, right, Leo? What is it, Italian?
Correct.
Yeah. And here you are doing a podcast in English. Why? Because we know the most widespread audience in the world speaks English. Now, what does that do, though? It means that when I walk into an organization, if I'm sitting around the table, I automatically am in a privileged position because I was born into this language. It's my language. I don't have any additional mental talk in my head, translating words, wondering what a pronunciation is, wondering if I'm using the right tone of voice. I naturally have been born and raised in the language, and that gives me immediate privilege anywhere I go in the world. And I know this because I've experienced the other side of it through my own foreign languages. I've experienced living in Denmark, speaking Danish, fighting for my place at the table, having people say, oh no, but Heather, your accent's so charming. I'm not trying to be charming in a business meeting. Give me some respect. And having those situations where I just thought, man, if they could hear me in English right now, they'd know how smart I was. They'd know how accomplished I was. And I couldn't do that. But here's the thing. As an English speaker, I can switch to English whenever I want. Can the Mandarin speaker do that? Can the Italian speaker do that? You know, you don't have that benefit. So at the basis of all of our conversations and communication in global business, we have an immediate power differential and hierarchy that is based on language. And we are not paying attention to that. The minute someone opens their mouth and you hear an accent, you have immediately judged them. And that judgment has come from the media you watched as a child, the movies. I mean, look at Hollywood. Every movie I ever watched, all the bad guys were German and Russian. Anytime I hear those accents, I immediately get like, ooh, can I trust this person? For no reason other than the fact that every bad guy in every movie growing up was from those countries. And the accents were played up even more, you know, and the Brits as well. British English, they were usually bad guys as well, unless it was Sean Connery, you know, he's excellent. But the point here is that we have such an enormous amount of bias in our thoughts, the way that we judge people, the minute they open their mouths. And we aren't having those conversations in the DEI discussions. That's been completely forgotten and it underpins everything. So I know that was a very long answer. I hate to ramble on, but this is an incredibly important topic that I hope more and more companies will begin to look at.
This episode is sponsored by International Expansion Explained. Are you looking to expand internationally, but you're not sure where to start? Or you export already, but would like to venture further overseas? Reach out to arrange an International Clarity session and learn more about growth plans at katherinereed.com. That is katherinereed.com. Let's move on to online presentations, also because they are the norm nowadays. I mean, you and I are using Zoom, but I use Zoom also when I'm at the office. So what are the typical presentation skills you see managers doing online right now?
Do you mean kind of the bad things or the good things?
I could ask you both, but I'm more interested in the bad ones.
Okay. So the skills that they might be lacking at times. Okay. I think the biggest challenge for everyone has been learning how to connect on camera. So many people that I work with, I sit with them across the table. They are so animated. They're so dynamic. Their personalities shine. The minute you get them on camera, blank, deer in the headlights, do not know how to form a sentence or be themselves. Everything is incredibly stilted. They lose their entire personality. So knowing how to connect on camera is a big one, being comfortable in front of a camera and then knowing how to connect with it. So realizing that you are not making eye contact with your audience unless you are looking in the camera. We all love to look on our screens and look at our slideshow and stare at that and look at the people on the screen. And we feel like we're really, really connecting with them, right? Like we're watching them nod their head and everything. But it's not until we look back into the camera that they actually feel us looking at them. And if you can get good at that, that's amazing. It is magic, because if you were in a real life situation, you would have to be splitting that eye contact among everyone in the whole room and trying to make contact with everyone. Online, you can make contact with thousands of people all at once simply by looking in your camera, and it creates an entirely different level of connection, but very few people can do it well. We're still learning. We're still learning. And everyone says, but then I can't see their reactions. Yeah, I get it. I know there's compromises, but I believe that when I'm speaking, I want you to feel that I'm looking at you. And then when you speak to me, I look onto the screen, because most often everyone I speak to, they're looking at their screen anyway. So it doesn't really matter if I'm making eye contact back when you're speaking or not. But that's when I really want to see you, is when you're speaking. And that means I have to have some trust in my message, that it's landing well, that that you're hearing me, and it can lead to some misunderstanding. But I would say those are the two biggest failures for most executives right now in the online space. In addition to that, you know, we're trying to find our way around turn-taking, which is quite different online, making sure we're inclusive of everyone, that no one is allowed to hide, turn off the camera, put yourself on mute. If you were already anxious and introverted going into these discussions, not really wanting to be seen and heard in real life, well, it just got so much easier online. So we have to work harder to include people in our discussions.
So for the people out there, switch on your camera. Yeah. If you're keeping them off.
Switch on those cameras, especially in the smaller meetings. But you'd be surprised to hear that when I'm giving larger presentations or I'm doing longer training seminars online, I tell people it's fine if they want to turn off their cameras. And I know that I am in the absolute minority of speakers and trainers worldwide, but it's basically because when we share our screen, and if you're in Teams, for example, you turn into a little teeny tiny box in the corner and your slide takes center stage, which is completely backwards for any kind of presentation ever. You should be center stage. The slide is supporting you. And online communication has switched that. And that's a horrible, horrible thing. That's a big problem. If I'm a little teeny box in the bottom and I can't see anyone and my screen is all slide, why should they have to sit there with their cameras on? You know, I think sometimes it's very selfish of the speaker to demand that every camera be on so that I can see you and so that I know you're there and I know you're listening. And there's absolutely no benefit to the listener in having that camera on other than stressing them more. So allowing them to turn it off, unless you are having smaller discussions and you're interacting, I think is absolutely fair. And then you as a presenter have to be good. You have to hold their attention, even though their camera's off. You have to do a good job. You can't just show up and not be prepared. So it is a very different world, and there are pros and cons. But yeah, we're navigating it. We're getting there.
Your book is coming out very soon, March 17. Tell us a little bit more about the book and who should read it.
Oh, I'm very, very excited about the book. Thanks for asking. Yeah, it's out on the 17th, which feels very, very soon. It's titled Unmuted, How to Show Up, Speak Up, and Inspire Action. And it really is, you know, my manifesto for how we should be communicating in global organizations, focusing on a more holistic view of conscious, confident, and connected communication. So turning down the dominant voices that are too loud, lifting up the voices that might be too soft, and unmuting those who just are so fearful of speaking up in a toxic environment. So that's the crux of the book. And when I wrote the book, I wrote it very specifically for top leaders, C-suite down to -3 in global organizations managing global teams. That was who I wrote this book for. Yet, there have been a number of people reading the pre-copies. I've been getting a lot of feedback, and I have been absolutely amazed by how it is resonating with a much, much wider audience than I ever could have imagined. For example, 25-year-old Indian creative living in London, and it was like the best thing she ever read. And I said, that's so interesting because I absolutely did not have you in mind when I wrote this. Like, you were the last person on the planet I was writing this book for. But I think it just points to the fact that we are ready to hear new voices. I think it probably resonated with her and is resonating with a younger generation as well, because I wrote this for like 55-year-old plus people at the top of organizations. I wasn't thinking about the younger demographic, but at the same time, I understand it because like them, I'm looking at the world around me and I'm saying, what is going on? Our world is a mess. And how did we end up here? And you know what? I think it's time for some new voices to take a stand. I want to hear some new perspectives because what got us here is leading us off a cliff. I want to hear more Eastern voices. I want to hear minorities. I want to hear women. I want to hear different people speaking up in the world. And those people have been muted for far too long. And I think that younger generation that's coming up wants their voices to be heard as well. So I think that the book really hits on that need for all of us to feel heard, to feel that we belong, and helping us to overcome those fears for sharing ourselves with the world, our stories, our ideas, because every time we do that, we're making ourselves vulnerable. I mean, people listening now could just send you a bunch of hate mail saying, that Heather lady, why did you have her on your show, right? I mean, we put ourselves in a vulnerable position when we put our ideas out into the world. And that's what unmuting is. It's, you could be unmuting in your family, in your organization, in your team, in the world, through community work, through movements. And I think our world is ready for this, especially after 2 years of sitting on Zoom calls saying, you're on mute, you're on mute. We've been on mute for a really long time, long before the pandemic. And I think it's time for us all to press that unmute button and let our voices be heard.
And I'll make sure to link it in the show notes of this episode. Heather, I have one final question I ask everyone who comes on the show. Please tell us one memorable moment. Share with us one memorable moment from your international career. You can choose between a happy episode, a funny episode, or even a catastrophic episode. Your pick.
Oh, wow. 20 years down to one story.
Yes.
Yeah. But one I think that stands out the most for me, it was probably one of the biggest learning experiences from a cultural perspective and just in a lot of ways. I was asked to run a training program in Sudan. And I was very unsure about going there. I spoke to my parents, spoke to my friends, spoke to colleagues. What do you think about me going to Sudan? And they're like, young woman traveling alone, you're going into Sudan, you better pack your bulletproof vest, all these things, right? It's like, I'm not going to South Sudan. Like, I'm not going into a war zone. You know, I was going to the capital. I was going to be in a 5-star hotel, you know, best treatment, best everything for 2 weeks. I had a lot of people who were going to be taking care of me. Yet, I did consider this, and I had people saying, Heather, you're a mother. You know, I had two young, my girls were young then, very young. You're a mother. How can you do that? Guilting me, shaming me for making the decision to go there. And when I was there, it was during a time where there were attacks, bombings, shootings in two European countries, and one in America, which that's a bit more common these days, but three really massive violent episodes in the Western world during the time I was in Khartoum. And I just had this feeling that I need to tell the world about this, right? I went onto LinkedIn and I made a post saying, I've been very secretive about where I am these weeks. I haven't told anybody where I am, and it's because I'm in Sudan. And I was worried. I was fearful for my safety. I didn't want anyone to know where I was. I didn't want to be targeted because everyone had made me so fearful to go there. And the international media has given us stories and shaped our views of this country. And so I wrote, you know, here I am in at the same time when these violent episodes have happened all over the Western world. And guess where there has not been one violent incident? Khartoum, Sudan. I feel safer here than I would anywhere any of you are right now. And the whole point of this was to show that, you know, the way the media shapes our biases, the way the world, the geopolitical landscape, the economic superpowers of our world feed us stories that make us so strongly believe positively or negatively, creating biases around cultures, people, countries, usually simply due to economics or politics. And what happened after I posted that was I became a mini celebrity in Sudan. The police force of Sudan reshared this post. It went viral all over these different WhatsApp groups. I had CEOs of companies showing up at my hotel, bringing me gifts. I had one guy, I had got sunglasses, I got flowers, I got scarves, I got you name it. And people were responding saying, thank you. Thank you for sharing that message with your world, so that people could understand that that's not who we are and that's not what our world is about. You know, and unfortunately, Sudan is in even more and more trouble these days. But at the time, they were the most hospitable, warm, and welcoming people, inviting me into their homes, inviting me to weddings. I mean, it was an amazing, amazing experience. And I thought, what if I had listened to all those naysayers, the people who were placing fear in me, telling me I shouldn't go, making me feel guilty, making me feel, I think we do need to think about risk in the world, especially these days when our world is so unsafe. But don't let your bias and your fear stop you from having amazing international experiences and connecting with humans all over the world who want and need the same exact things as you, because how sad to miss out on that experience, right? So that's one of the biggest learning moments, I think, of my entire career. And I keep it in mind every time I'm asked to travel or meet new people and do something new in the world.
Thank you, Heather. So to wrap this up, tell us a little bit more about your current role. And after listening to this episode, who should connect with you?
Oh, yes. Well, my day job is as a communication specialist, a global communication specialist. So I founded my company, Global Speech Academy, here in Singapore in 2007. And we focus on training, coaching, and consulting in really all things global communication. And the people who should connect with me is really anyone who is trying to speak up in the world. If you're trying to unmute your organization to drive more innovation and inclusion, that's what we can do through this unmuted framework that I've developed now. So that would be the one type of person. If you're in DEI, if you're in HR, if you are this in the C-suite of an organization looking to make some major changes and reach a higher potential in your teams, definitely reach out to me. And then also, if you're a team leader and navigating this world of global communication, you want to be able to speak clearly and confidently. You want to speak up in the world. You have a mission that you want to share. I'd love to help you share that. And the best place to reach out would probably be through my company website, globalspeechacademy.com. And you will soon be able to learn a lot about the upcoming book at heatherhanson.com. So you can also link with me, of course, on LinkedIn. I'm open to connect with everyone. I really enjoy that.
Heather, thank you for your insights and thank you for joining us on the International Business Podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
You can find the podcast on all the major platforms. Make sure to subscribe. Do not miss the weekly episodes. And are you an international professional? Connect with us on LinkedIn to come on the show. For now, cheers.